Welcome back, everybody. Today we're taking a deep dive into a super interesting period in Indian history, the decades leading up to independence, from like 1900 to 1947.
Yeah, it's a really pivotal period.
We've got letters, writings, all sorts of historical accounts, you name it, all giving us a glimpse into how Indian intellectuals were thinking about like the future of their nation.
Right.
It wasn't just about, you know, kicking out the British. They were wrestling with some pretty huge questions, like what kind of India did they even want? What values should it be based on? How should it be governed?
Exactly.
And those debates get seriously fascinating. I mean, there was so much at stake.
It really was a crucible of ideas. The whole context of British colonialism, you know, really forced Indian intellectuals to confront these questions head on. Who were they as a nation? How could they preserve their culture while also dealing with this colonial influence? And these weren't just theoretical discussions. I mean, they had very real consequences.
It's almost like they were trying to build a house while they were still arguing over, like, the blueprints.
Exactly. And that's what makes these debates so compelling.
Something that really jumped out at me in the source material was how the British approach to actually ruling India changed over time.
Right.
It's like, at first, they almost co-opted the existing systems.
Right.
For instance, did you know that for a while, British coins in India actually had the Mughal emperor's face on them?
That's right. The East India Company initially saw the value in kind of maintaining some sense of continuity. They even acknowledged the Mughal emperor's suzerainty. It was a pretty pragmatic approach to consolidating their power, I think.
But that changed pretty drastically, didn't it? What caused that shift?
Well, as the British gained more and more control, their policies became a lot more, I guess you could say, assertive. And unsurprisingly, this caused growing resentment among Indians, which, you know, fueled the nationalist movement.
And a really clear example of this is the Ilbert Bill controversy in 1882. Here was a bill that just proposed allowing Indian judges to preside over cases that involved Europeans. I mean, on the surface, it seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah, it does.
But for the British community in India, this was like a step too far. It challenged the whole racial hierarchy that their power and privilege was built on. And the reaction was intense.
Oh, yeah.
The sources really captured the anxiety perfectly. One British civil servant, John Beams, even said that the bill was concealing the elements of a revolution. Talk about foreshadowing.
Right. And that quote really reveals a lot about the mindset of the British at the time. They saw any attempt to empower Indians as this, like, direct threat to their dominance. And in a way, Beams was right. The Ilbert Bill became this rallying cry for Indian nationalists and really fueled the movement even more.
It's amazing how one seemingly small legal change could have such a huge impact.
Absolutely. And it really speaks to the bigger theme that emerges from these sources, the rise of Indian nationalism, and even more than that, the emergence of different ideologies within the movement itself.
Right, because it wasn't a monolithic movement at all, was it?
Yeah.
There were all these different visions of what an independent India should look like.
Precisely. The sources introduce us to figures like Surendranath Banerjee, who founded the Indian Association in 1876. His approach was to advocate for greater Indian participation, but within the existing British framework, like a more gradual path to self-rule.
So working within the system, so to speak.
Exactly. But as you delve deeper into the source material, you start to see more radical perspectives emerge.
Like the Indian National Congress. They ultimately pushed for complete independence, didn't they?
They did. The Congress started out as a more moderate organization, but over time, it evolved into this really powerful force demanding full self-rule. And their vision was of a united, secular India, you know, where all citizens would have equal rights and opportunities.
But along with the Congress, you also had groups like the Hindu Mahasabha. And they were advocating for a pretty different vision, weren't they?
Right. The Hindu Mahasabha, they believed that India's identity should be rooted in Hinduism. They envisioned a society where, you know, Hindu culture and values were at the forefront.
Which, of course, clashed with the Congress's idea of a secular, pluralistic India.
Exactly. These competing visions of what India should be were a major point of tension, and they had far-reaching implications for the future of the nation.
And then, of course, adding to this whole mix, you have the rise of the Muslim League, led by Muhammad Ali Jinnah. They ultimately ended up championing the idea of a separate Muslim state, Pakistan, didn't they?
They did. And it's important to note that the Muslim League's position actually evolved over time. While they initially sought greater rights and protections for Muslims within a united India, eventually their demands shifted towards partition.
So it wasn't like this overnight thing.
No, not at all. It was driven by a really complex interplay of factors, including this growing sense of marginalization within a Hindu-majority India. And, you know, the political climate at the time was becoming increasingly polarized.
So you have all these different groups, all with very different visions of what India should be. Were these debates just limited to the political sphere, or did they kind of spill over into other areas of life?
Oh, absolutely. They permeated social and cultural spheres as well. For example, the concept of Hindu Sangathon gained traction during this period.
Could you explain a little bit more about what that concept entailed?
Sure. Hindu Sangathon, it emphasized Hindu unity and strength, and it arose in part because of anxieties about, you know, the perceived threat from Muslims and a desire to protect Hindu interests.
So it's kind of a response to these growing calls for a separate Muslim state and the increasing presence of Muslim political organizations.
Precisely. And it's really fascinating to see how figures like V.D. Savarkar articulated these ideologies in their writings. His work gives us a really powerful lens through which to understand this particular strand of the nationalist movement.
And it's just incredible to think that these weren't just abstract intellectual exercises. I mean, they were shaping the very destiny of India.
Exactly. These weren't just theoretical discussions. They had very real consequences. They shaped the entire independence movement and ultimately influenced the kind of nation India became in 1947.
It must have been an incredibly dynamic and at times pretty volatile period with all these competing visions kind of clashing.
Oh, it was. And it's a good reminder that history is rarely neat and tidy. It's messy and complex, you know? It's like a tapestry woven from all these different and sometimes even conflicting threads.
And by kind of unraveling these threads, we can gain a much deeper understanding, not just of India's past, but also its present.
Precisely. Many of the issues that were debated during this time, like national identity, religious pluralism, social justice, they're all still very relevant in India today.
Yeah. It's almost like these historical debates are echoing through time, and they're still informing the challenges and conversations we're seeing in contemporary India.
That's a great way to put it. And it really underscores why understanding this period is so crucial. It provides this essential context for grappling with the complexities of modern India.
So we've seen how British policies shaped Indian responses, and how those responses led to these diverse visions for an independent nation. What I'm curious about now is how these intellectual currents actually played out in the fight for independence itself. Did they translate into specific strategies or approaches?
That's a great question, and one that we'll definitely delve into right after a quick break. So yeah, these intellectual currents, they definitely had an impact on the strategies and approaches that were used in the fight for independence. You can really see this spectrum from like moderate reformism all the way to, you know, radical revolution.
So it sounds like it wasn't just one singular path to freedom. There were multiple approaches being debated and even implemented at the same time.
Exactly. Some people advocated for working within the system, pushing for incremental change through things like dialogue and negotiation. They thought that by proving your capacity for governance, Indians could slowly gain more and more autonomy.
Like figures such as Banerjee and the Indian Association, trying to change the system from the inside.
Exactly. But then other groups, like the Congress, increasingly turned to tactics like civil disobedience and nonviolent resistance, particularly under Gandhi's leadership.
Gandhi's philosophy of satyagraha, or truth force, I mean, it really captivated the world. How did his approach fit into this whole landscape of ideas?
Gandhi's satyagraha was incredibly powerful. He believed in nonviolent resistance as this way to expose the injustice of colonial rule and sort of awaken the moral conscience of the oppressors. It wasn't passive. It was about actively resisting unjust laws and systems.
And his leadership truly mobilized millions of people, didn't it? It turned the independence movement into a mass phenomenon.
It did. Gandhi's ability to connect with ordinary people, his message of truth and nonviolence, it resonated really deeply across India and across religious and social divides.
And then alongside Gandhi, you also had other influential leaders like Jawaharlal Nehru, who was advocating for a modern, secular, democratic India. How did his vision differ from Gandhi's?
Nehru was a true visionary leader, deeply influenced by socialist ideals. He put a lot of emphasis on economic development and social progress, and believed in having a strong central government to really drive those changes. Gandhi was more focused on the moral and spiritual side of the struggle, while Nehru brought this focus on modernizing India and creating a whole new society.
So they kind of represented different but complementary aspects of the independence movement. Gandhi was mobilizing the masses, and Nehru was shaping the vision for the future of India.
Yeah, you could say that. And it's important to keep in mind that this period wasn't just about political ideologies. India was going through a time of massive social and economic change.
It wasn't just about ideas. It was about actual lived experiences.
Yeah.
How did everyday people experience those shifts?
The sources we have do offer some glimpses into that. For example, advancements in technology and infrastructure had a huge impact on daily life. The railways expanded, connecting different parts of the country in ways that were never possible before.
It's hard to picture India today without its enormous rail network. It must have felt revolutionary at the time.
It was a complete game changer. But even with these changes, there were some paradoxes. Technology connected people and made trade easier, but it also deepened the inequalities that already existed.
So progress also created its own set of new problems.
In a way, yes. It just goes to show that technology and infrastructure are always influenced by social, political, and economic forces, and they shape those forces in turn. It's this really complex interplay. And this period also saw new forms of cultural expression emerging. Writers, artists, and thinkers, they were grappling with questions of identity, tradition, and modernity in their works.
So it was this period of huge creative energy as well.
Absolutely. Thinkers like Rabindranath Tagore explored themes like nationalism, spirituality, and humanism. Their work provided new ways of understanding what it meant to be Indian in a world that was changing so rapidly.
It's amazing how these individuals were able to capture the aspirations and anxieties of a whole nation going through this monumental transformation.
And their contributions still shape Indian culture and identity today. It's a reminder that the struggle for independence wasn't just political. It was a cultural and intellectual awakening as well.
We've talked about all these different ideologies and approaches within the movement, but I'm guessing these differences also caused some tension and disagreements, right?
Oh, absolutely. There were debates about the pace of reform, the role of violence versus nonviolence, and even fundamental disagreements about the very nature of the nation they were fighting for. Some advocated for complete independence, while others favored dominion status within the British Commonwealth.
So even while they were united against British rule, they also had these internal struggles over what the future should look like.
It's interesting how those internal debates reflected the bigger ideological currents we talked about earlier.
Exactly. The independence movement wasn't just about breaking free from British rule. It was also about figuring out what that freedom would actually mean and what kind of nation India would become.
Did these disagreements ever threaten to, you know, weaken the movement? Not necessarily. I think these debates actually showed just how vibrant and dynamic Indian society was. It was a time of intense intellectual engagement, where all these different visions for the future were being debated and shaped.
So instead of seeing these disagreements as weaknesses, we can see them as part of this healthy process of nation building.
Precisely. Those debates were actually crucial in shaping how the independence movement went and the kind of nation that finally emerged in 1947.
We've covered so much ground today. Competing visions, social and economic transformation, the rise of these key figures. What I'm curious about now is how these intellectual currents actually impacted the India that came into being in 1947. Did these debates have a lasting legacy?
That's a great question, and it's one we'll explore more after a quick break. Stay tuned.
So we've really dug into these different visions for India, right? From wanting more autonomy within the British system to pushing for total independence. And we talked about how all those intellectual debates were happening at the same time as these massive social and economic changes. It's clear that this period was a real turning point for India.
No doubt about it. It was like this huge melting pot of ideas, a time of enormous hope, but also a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, the choices that were made back then, those debates that raged on for decades, they're still shaping India today.
One thing that keeps sticking with me is this idea of so many different perspectives. It seems like there wasn't one easy answer to what India should become.
Yeah, that's a really sharp observation. And honestly, it's something that often gets overlooked in the way we usually tell history. Mm-hmm. We tend to like oversimplify things, make it into these nice, neat stories.
But the reality was way more complicated, right?
Oh, for sure. There were tons of individuals and groups, all with their own ideas about India's future. And those visions often clashed, sometimes in ways you wouldn't expect.
It's almost like trying to put together a jigsaw puzzle. But the pieces are from a bunch of different puzzles all mixed up.
That's a great way to put it. And it shows the incredible challenge that Indian leaders faced back then. They were trying to build a whole new nation out of this, like mosaic of different cultures, languages, and religions.
It's no wonder there were so many arguments.
Well,
so
sure.
How did they finally manage all those different points of view? How did India become one unified nation with all those internal divisions?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? And there's no simple answer. It was messy. It was complicated. There were compromises, negotiations, and sometimes even violence.
Yeah, it really reminds you that building a nation is almost never easy or straightforward, especially in a country as diverse as India.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, it's a process that's still going on today. India is still working through many of those same questions from back then, questions about identity, unity, social justice.
So what can we actually learn from this period? How can we use those insights to understand India today?
Well, that's where it gets really interesting. I think one key takeaway is that it's so important to be open to multiple perspectives. We need to realize that there isn't one right way to be Indian, no single story that can sum up all the richness and complexity of the country.
So it's about celebrating all that diversity while also still working towards unity.
Exactly. And another crucial thing we can learn is just how powerful dialogue and debate can be. We have to create spaces where different viewpoints can be shared and challenged, where we can have these respectful and constructive conversations about the things that divide us, just like those thinkers were doing in the lead up to independence.
So finding that common ground without erasing what makes us unique.
Exactly. And lastly, we need to remember that nation building never really stops. It didn't just happen in 1947 and suddenly everything was done. It's a constant journey that requires all of us to be aware and engaged.
It's about recognizing how far we've come, but also seeing the challenges that are still there and working together to build a more just and fair society for everyone. It's pretty inspiring to see how those early discussions about what kind of India they wanted are still so relevant now.
I agree. And that's what makes studying this period so important. It gives us valuable insights into how nations are built, the challenges of democracy, and just how much ideas can really shape our world.
Well, as we wrap up our deep dive today, here's a final thought to leave you with. How do you think those early debates about identity and what it means to be a nation are shaping conversations happening in India today about things like religious pluralism, social justice, and the future of the country? It's something to think about as you continue to explore this really fascinating and complex chapter in Indian history. Until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep learning.